before you drink. What you get isn't always what you think.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst.
Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. As always, thanks to Recess Duty for playing us in with our theme song. We do appreciate it. This month, we're focusing the show on the most recent proposed regulations from the Alaska Alcohol Beverage Control Board. We'll have two interviews about that, and I'll be giving you the background. But first, before we dive into that, let's go to beer news. Another new brewery has plans to open for business in October. Forbidden Peak Brewery was pouring its beers at the Capital City Brewfest and hopes to be open soon. It's located at 11798 Glacier Highway in Juneau. The Spanish-based brewing company Mahu San Miguel Group has raised its stake in Founders Brewing Company of Grand Rapids, Michigan, from 30% to 90%, making it the majority owner. Winterlong Brewing Company of Whitehorse, Yukon Territory, has purchased a canning machine and will no longer be bottling its beers. While we seldom see Winterlong's excellent beers in Alaska, if you find yourself passing through Whitehorse, they are worth seeking out. On Saturday, October 19th, the annual Alaska Crafted Festival will be held from 2 to 6 p.m. at Chilkoot Charlie's in Anchorage. The festival features beer, wine, and spirits made in Alaska. A $45 ticket includes a complimentary tasting glass and samples of beverages from across the state. Enjoy live music, vendor booths, food, and more for a truly Alaskan experience. This event is a Brewers Guild of Alaska fundraiser, and all proceeds go towards promoting craft beer and the brewing industry through consumer education, community events, and legislative advocacy. On Monday, September 10th, the City of Palmer approved Ordinance 19-015, which changed the definitions within Palmer Municipal Code to allow microbreweries to be located within the general commercial districts. This change was necessary to permit the planned move of Bleeding Heart Brewery into downtown Palmer in early 2020. The proposed changes to the regulations governing brewery tap rooms by the Alcohol Beverage Control Board's director, Erica McConnell, continue to generate comment, most of it strongly negative. Alaska Department of Commerce Commissioner Julie Anderson had harsh criticism and serious concerns that the board's proposed changes are restrictive and do not support a business inclusion initiative. The City of Soldotna passed an opposing resolution at their meeting on Thursday, September 12th. Senator Pete Michicki had been working on an overhaul of the state of Alaska's alcohol laws since 2012 and said he does not support this modification. Quote, "I will be fighting those restrictions. My interest is loosening some of the restrictions that are already on breweries and distilleries. I support a free market in small business, and that has been hindered in this case." End quote. The board claims to be interpreting legislative intent, but 11 legislators, including Senator Scott Kawasaki, sent a letter to Director McConnell on September 16th to voice their thoughts on the proposed changes. In the letter, Kawasaki, along with 10 other legislators, requested that the board put the regulations on hold and allow the legislature to deliberate and handle the issues if needed in the next legislative session. The letter states that if passed, the change in regulation would conflict with the intent of the law as it was passed. The legislators say, quote, "Many of us helped work on these bills and believe brewers and distillers are acting in accordance with legislative intent," end quote. McConnell said in an email statement, quote, "The letter will be provided to the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board as a public comment on the regulations draft," end quote. If you'd like to add your voice, the board is still accepting public comments regarding the proposed change to the regulations covering distillery and brewery tap rooms. You can submit your comment to the board via an email to amco.regs, that's amco.regs, at alaska.gov. The deadline is 4:30 p.m., October 4th. In a possibly related development, the Alcohol Beverage Control Board has announced that it will be holding a public meeting in Anchorage on October 3rd. The public notice of the meeting stated, "Pursuant to Alaska Statutes 04.06.050, the Alcohol Beverage Control Board is holding a special meeting on Thursday, October 3rd, 2019, to consider its agenda covering a personnel matter relating to the director's performance. This meeting will begin at 10 a.m. on Thursday, October 3rd, 2019, and will be telephonic. The public call-in number for the meeting is 1-800-315-6338, code 69173, # That's it for beer news. Up next, a feature in which I'll discuss the current state of Alaska's alcohol laws. This is your host, Bill Howell, here on Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, and we'll be right back.
This is Sal Cassano, host of Dead Musicians. Join me from 7 to 9 each Saturday night to hear all your favorites from yesteryear. Let's celebrate all the late greats together here on listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. In order to understand what's going on with the Alcohol Beverage Control Board and brewery tap rooms, you must understand the current state of play when it comes to Alaska's liquor laws. So let's look at how we got where we are and what the laws in Alaska currently say. For just about anyone alive today, prohibition seems like ancient history. After all, it officially ended at 3:31 p.m. local time on December 5, 1933, when Utah became the 36th state to ratify the 21st Amendment. It's true that the end of federal prohibition didn't end it at the state level. Mississippi, the last holdout, was officially dry until 1966. Even today, there are counties and towns across the United States where it remains illegal to consume or even possess alcohol, including many here in Alaska. Still, unless they happen to live in a dry community in the bush, most Alaskans probably never give prohibition a second thought. That would be a mistake, however, as decisions made back in 1933 are still impacting all of us today. The single most influential decision made by the Alaska Territorial Legislature during repeal, after deciding that Alaska wouldn't stay dry, was to decree that the state would limit the number of licenses to produce and sell alcohol based on the population in a given area. The idea behind this limited entry model is that alcohol is a social evil, and it was the role of the territorial or state government, as opposed to local communities, to ensure that its citizens do not have more access to alcohol than their rulers think proper. In other words, the goal of the system is to control public access to alcohol and mitigate the social costs of alcohol consumption in a community by setting limits on the density of retail outlets. Currently, Alaska's statute says that there should only be one of each type of liquor license issued for every 3,000 inhabitants in a given town or borough, and only one restaurant license that allows the serving of beer and wine for every 1,500 inhabitants. In actuality, this nominal limit is seldom observed because the state has grandfathered many prior existing licenses into the current scheme. In fact, there are currently many more licenses active on the Kenai Peninsula than there should be based on its population. Take Seward as an example. That town has 6 beverage dispensary licenses and 4 package store licenses, when it should only have at most one of each based on its population. Every community on the peninsula except Seldovia is over-licensed with retail establishments because existing licensees were preserved or exempted when limitations were codified. This limited entry system, coupled with the grandfathering of existing licenses, has led to a totally predictable result. Since there would only be a limited number of such licenses issued, and there were already more licenses issued than there should be, no new licenses can be issued. Since it was impossible to obtain a new license, just having one rapidly became a valuable asset in its own right, regardless of the success or failure of the business associated with it. Licenses would be handed down from father to son, from one owner to the next, appreciating in value as the years passed. A piece of paper which might have cost a few hundred dollars when it was issued decades ago is now worth hundreds of thousands. What does this mean in the real world? Let's use the town of Soldotna as an example. Suppose you look around and decide that what downtown Soldotna really needs is a classy new fine dining restaurant. As part of your vision for your new establishment, you want it to serve upscale cocktails, single malt whiskeys, and small batch bourbons. The bad news is that to bring your vision to fruition, you'll have to purchase what's known in the trade as a beverage dispensary license, or BDL. It's what the rest of us call a full liquor license, meaning it allows the retail sale of spirits, not just beer and wine. The really bad news is that there aren't any BDLs available in Soldotna currently, and the last time one went on the market, it sold for $250,000. Remember, that's $250,000 just for a piece of paper that gives you the state's permission to sell alcohol. It doesn't include any liquor, furnishings, or real property. It's just a piece of paper to hang on the wall. So how does all this relate to the question at hand regarding brewery tap rooms? Well, Alaska had a couple of post-prohibition breweries, but none since World War II. And in the early 1990s, following the success of Alaskan Brewing, which opened in 1986 in Juneau, breweries began to open around the state. Brewing licenses were issued under the same population limits, i.e. one for every 3,000 people. But since there weren't currently any operating breweries, you could actually get such a license from the state rather than having to buy one from a current holder. In the mid-1990s, the concept of a brew pub hit Alaska, first with the Regal Eagle Brewing Company located in the North Slope restaurant, then with Cusack's Brew Pub and Roaster, a sports-themed bar located in the Northern Lights Hotel in Midtown Anchorage, requiring the state to create a separate license for them. The idea behind a brew pub is simple. It's a restaurant that brews its own beer to sell alongside its food. To reflect that concept, a brew pub license in Alaska restricts the brew pub from packaging its beer for sale anywhere else. Subject to that restriction, a brew pub can operate pretty much like any other restaurant. Again, since there were no currently operating brew pubs, the state issued new licenses on the basis of one for every 3,000 people. While brew pubs like Glacier Brewing and Moose's Tooth opened in Anchorage in the 1990s to much acclaim, running a regular packaging brewery was a much dicier proposition. Several breweries went out of business, and others that are very successful today, such as Midnight Sun Brewing Company and Silver Gulch Brewing and Bottling Company, very nearly went under. At one point, the owners of the former were looking to sell out, while the latter operated for 6 years before finally turning a profit. The margins in the extremely competitive wholesale beer market are very tight, as these breweries were going head-to-head with other distributing craft breweries, both within Alaska and from the lower 48. Distributors and retailers demand their share of the profit margin, meaning there's not much left for the brewer. Recognizing the difficulty in launching new brewing businesses, the Alaska legislature made a change in 2006 to state law in an effort to boost the fortunes of current and future small breweries. They made it legal for breweries to sell their products directly to consumers through a tap room. Prior to this change, brewers could only sell their products to distributors or to other retailers. They could not sell to the general public at all. It would be hard to overstate the importance of this change has made to the brewing in Alaska. When it was passed, there were about a dozen breweries in the state. Since its passage, that number has almost quadrupled. Why such an impact? The new law allowed a brewery to focus on direct sales to the public, retailing its beers and capturing all the profit margins that normally went to the distributor in the bar, restaurant, or package store owner. Small breweries could operate like brew pubs without kitchens, only serving their product on the premises and filling growlers for customers to take home. This path to quick profitability has made it possible for numerous breweries across the state to thrive and expand. Of course, when the legislature granted breweries the freedom to sell their products directly to the consumers, this did not come without strings. Many limitations were placed on the operation of these tap rooms. First, obviously, they could only sell their own products. No other alcoholic beverages could be sold, unlike a bar, restaurant, or brew pub. Second, hours were limited. Tap rooms were forced to close no later than 8 p.m. Third, the amount of beer that could be served for consumption on site was limited to 36 ounces per person per day. This is another limitation not placed on brew pubs, restaurants, or bars, which have no maximums for alcohol served. Even having seating at brewery serving counters was prohibited to ensure they weren't mistaken for a traditional bar. Finally, breweries were prohibited from having live entertainment of any kind, or even a television set. They were also prohibited from having any form of gaming on the premises. No pool tables, dart boards, pinball or poker machines, dominoes or cards. If you were to walk into a brewery tap room, order a beer, sit down at a table, take a deck of cards out of your pocket and start playing solitaire, you'll be politely asked to leave by the staff, since you are putting them in violation of their license. It is these restrictions, which are much more onerous than those in most other states, which the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board is proposing to tighten. I'll be discussing the issue with this month's guest. First up will be Lee Ellis, president of the Brewers Guild of Alaska and chief of brewing operations at Midnight Sun Brewing in Anchorage. After Lee, I'll be talking to Doug Hoag of Kenai River Brewing Company in Soldotna. For the record, I had arranged for an interview with a member of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, but the member in question was told by the board's lawyers that he could not speak about, quote, any currently open regulatory matters or matters before the board. So the board's position will just have to go unexplained, though I will be offering my own suppositions in that regard later in the show. We'll be right back with our first interview. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Hey everyone, this is Sharon Red Baron. Join me on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna for Red Baron Country on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 opposite the borough meeting.
I called up my DJ on Friday after work. I told him how you done me wrong, how much it hurt.
Hello and welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here in KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. Today we've got with us Lee Ellis, the president of the Brewers Guild of Alaska and the director of brewing operations for Midnight Sun Brewing Company in Anchorage. Hey, Lee, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Bill. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us. So there, Mr. President, let's talk about this proposed regulation change / interpretation of legislative intent that the director of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board has put forth.
So it's actually brought forth by AMCO, which is the Alcohol Marijuana Control Office. They were put to this project by the Alcohol Board, and the Alcohol Board requested that they come up with clear language to define other recreational and gaming opportunities would entail. However, we are absolutely opposed to what their interpretation or proposed interpretation would be. The interpretation is pretty clear in statute. Basically, we're not supposed to have pool tables, we're not supposed to have TVs, dart boards, and that other recreational and gaming activities was to basically cover any other sort of, foosball tables or pinball tables or anything else that wasn't named in statute, so the statute's not, 7 pages long.
So what they're proposing now to interpret this to include basically everything that involves an interaction with another human being. So no art shows, no brewery tours, no charitable fundraisers, no anything, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And Erica McConnell's effort to clarify this language, she basically made it so that they would make our tap rooms look like a white-walled room that you come in, your beer, and then get out. That was not the legislative intent. And I don't think that AMCO did the appropriate amount of research nor did they pass this by their legal folks before they proposed it.
What's driving this, Lee? I mean, I haven't got any impression that we have a big problem in this regard, that the breweries and their tasting rooms are getting out of the box, for want of a better term. What do you think is driving this rather draconian interpretation of things?
You know, there's been a lot of talk about why this came about. A lot of folks have wanted to kind of point the finger at the bar owners, saying that they proposed this kind of idea. That's pretty false. They, in fact, asked Erica McConnell to not do this before she did it. And Chart themselves actually publicly commented with opposition to this proposed interpretation. So it's not the bars that pushed it. It's literally Erica McConnell. And this is kind of how she's done things since she got there. You know, she's got a master's degree in landscape design. Doesn't exactly make her a ideal candidate for managing the alcohol industry. She also came to AMCO from the Anchorage Municipal Permitting Office. And anybody who's dealt with them knows that they have some very difficult interpretations of their own regulation that makes it very challenging for businesses in Anchorage to operate. So basically, we're dealing with regulators now that see regulation not as something that prohibits activities, but regulations are things that allow activities. So if things aren't expressly allowed in statute, they think everything should be illegal. So that's kind of what pushed us forward, just that mindset. And it's a challenging mindset that anybody in a highly regulated industry has to deal with.
I would wonder, the bar owners are not pushing this. I wonder if this is because they're concerned about a backlash from the brewery supporters, because this is about the third time in the last 2 years that a proposal has been made to hurt the brewery taproom business. First, there was the 80-20 rule that they slipped into the last attempt at the revision, and then House Labor and Commerce put in the poison pill to reduce the amount of beer that could be served to 24 ounces. So that effectively killed the last attempt to revise the alcohol laws. And now we have this. So, and that's not even talking about the whole distillery mixed drink cocktail issue that had to get solved by a law in the legislature. So I don't know. I'm sensing a pattern here, Lee. Are you seeing the same pattern than I am, or am I just paranoid?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that both us and the bar owners have some disagreements about what taprooms should be able to do. You know, some of this legislation has been blown up by legislators working independently. Adam Wohl was the one who proposed a 24-ounce rule. And again, I don't think Char necessarily is pushing for that, because I think they would be aware that that was a poison pill, and destroying changes to the alcohol rewrite is it's not good for anybody. Even if we don't get what we want and they don't get what they want, we still need to see this finished. It's been a long project, 7 years long, and we'd like to see it pass. And any other changes that we really want to improve tap rooms for distilleries, wineries, and breweries, none of that can really get done until after we get this legislation passed. So yeah, I mean, there's always disagreements. You know, Alaska's tap rooms are, you know, the ones attached to manufacturers are probably the most highly regulated in the U.S. And we have some of the strictest prohibitions of any state. So we are working to change that. And I think a lot of bar owners are coming around to kind of seeing things that, you know, our business improves their business and their business improves our business. And I think it's been a challenge for some of them to kind of adjust to these modern times of changes in consumer demand.
Well, do you have any specific proposals that you're looking at? Any ideas and specifics to make changes for the tap rooms to liberalize things?
Yeah, absolutely. So we, you know, the BGA has a government affairs committee, and they're currently tasked with defining what our legislative priorities are. We have a lobbyist this year who's going to be helping us just get SB 52 passed over the gold line. So, you know, what we're going to accomplish this year and what we're going to accomplish in the future are certainly two separate things. We want to better respond to market demand. We'd like to see the entire alcohol industry in Alaska better respond to market demand. So there's changes we want to see to the tap rooms in regards to probably ounce pours. The entertainment statute will certainly get a change this year. We've already had Senator Machicki reach out to us and request that we assist him in coming up with better, clearer language so that we don't have to deal with this going forward. You know, it's obviously demand of consumers to see changes in that statute. So we're all kind of realizing that that change has to occur and it can't wait. Some things might have to wait. Certainly, again, we'd like to see longer hours, you know, more pours, and other retail model changes that we maybe haven't yet thought of.
Well, I guess we'll wait and see what happens here. I guess the deadline for the public comment is the 4th of October. Have you heard any indication when we might have a decision by the board after that date?
I would expect probably the following board meeting after that. I'm not sure when that is scheduled. I do not expect this regulation to go through. However, I'm not a psychic and I don't predict the future. But it has received a strong amount of negative comment and opposition from all the way up to the governor's office, all the way down to friends of mine that I ski with. So it's definitely probably one of the more commented on proposals in the history of AMCO. So I can't imagine them going through with it. However, you never know.
You never know. That's true.
Never know.
As Mark Twain said, no man's life, liberty, or property is safe when the legislature's in session.
Yeah. Well, this isn't a legislative issue, and I definitely would want to reiterate that to people. You know, can we come up with better statute? Absolutely. Is this a fault of the legislature? Absolutely not. This is a regulator operating on their own accord, and has created a significant amount of frustration throughout the government the way that Eric McConnell has managed AMCO. So, yeah, I would definitely encourage people to direct their anger on this to AMCO, not to their local legislature.
Well, I would encourage them to do that and also let their local legislator know what they're in favor of, like a better deal for the brewery tap rooms, too.
So, yeah, we'll definitely be reaching out to people and encouraging craft brewery supporters to reach out to the legislature, especially members of the House. And that's where SB 52 will hopefully be ending up this year. And we really want to get people to encourage their legislator to support SB 52 as it's proposed. There may be some changes we are working, which are right now. We are negotiating with them to come up with some compromises to improve our situation. So there may be some other changes that both us and Char propose as agreeable to both parties. And again, we'll be asking our supporters to support adding in some of those amendment changes.
Sounds good. So take that president hat off and put that director of brewing operations hat on and tell me what's coming up with Midnight Sun. I see termination dust on the mountain, so I assume you do too.
Yeah, we had a format change this year. We're now putting termination dust into 12-ounce bottles, so we're giving that a shot. We're seeing a lot of retailers switch over to 12-ounce bottles and moving away from 22s. Unfortunately, the bottler project has been a little bit of a hiccup. We got the wrong parts to change over to 12-ounce bottles. Just got the right parts in a few weeks ago. Now we're just waiting on the labels to come in. So hopefully this will be the one year only, that we don't have termination dust available when it has settled in on the mountains.
So what else have you got coming up here in the near future? Any new other interesting new releases?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's that time of year again where we can start brewing other things that we want to brew instead of just trying to keep up with the summer demand. Just put Treat out this year in cans, so we're selling them in 4-pack 12-ounce cans. So a brewed IPA coming up pretty soon here. We just released Oktoberfest, which is our Fest beer, which is a traditional Oktoberfest beer that will be available in kegs and 4-pack cans. Let's see, what else do we have coming up here? We just released a Golden Brute as well, so we did a really nice Brute Belgian beer. So a lot of people have been doing it in the IPA format, but we went with a nice golden, so it's got a real strong, like, dry, champagne-y fruit flavor. It actually turned out pretty fantastic.
That sounds cool.
Yeah. And then we'll be doing a chai brown. That'll be coming up pretty soon in the future. And then we'll be redoing another beer called Leche Robusta, which was extremely popular, which was a horchata-style stout. So that'll be coming out in November. And then, as per usual, Berserker coming up in October, and then Arc Devil coming out Black Friday, right after Thanksgiving.
Looking forward to both of those. Those are definitely classics.
Oh, yeah.
All righty. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, Lee, today. We appreciate it. And keep fighting the good fight there, man.
Yes. There's nothing more Alaskan than fighting the government.
That's
so
right.
I'm proud to do it.
All righty. Thanks a lot. This is Drinking
Bill.
The Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. We'll be right back with our next interview.